Welcome to My Writing Table, a podcast where you'll hear from your favorite authors, creatives, and publishing professionals. We'll talk about books, the writing craft, and the often wonky journey to publication. Today's guest, Kimberly Willis Holt. Kimberly Willis Holt considers herself a Southerner, even though her dad's military career meant growing up around the world. She wanted to be a writer since she was 12 years old. Some 20 years later, she started writing by hand at a card table on her screened porch. Welcome, Kimberly.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast.
Well, it's so exciting to have an author who writes for our young readers. What got you into writing for a younger audience? What drew you to that?
Well, I usually say that I didn't choose the genre. It chose me. I started writing in Amarillo like you did. Yeah. And it was in 1994. We had just moved to Amarillo. I'd lived there 6 months, didn't know a soul. And I didn't have a computer. They did have computers back then. And I would write on the screen porch. And I thought I would be writing adult fiction because that's what I read. And I did have a little girl. I had a six-year-old daughter. But the protagonist that came to me that really spoke to my heart was 12 years old. I still thought maybe this is an adult book, but done with a young protagonist because I'd read several books like that and loved them. And, you know, I thought, well, I better explore what middle grade or young adult is. And so I went to the library in Amarillo, and the youth librarian gave me a stack of books when I told him what I was doing. And I read, you know, the first one I read was Pam Conrad's The Prairie Songs. And it touched my heart. And it made me realize that you can write about anything when you write for young people, because she touches on a woman who has a mental breakdown. And this was a middle grade novel. Wow. And so because I was only aware of picture books because of reading them to my daughter at her age, I started to read more and more middle grade and young adult books. And so that I realized my story, that's where my story belonged, somewhere there.
How did your publishing journey begin?
Well, I wrote for 4 years before I was actually published, but I wrote every day. I acted like it was a job, and I would show up at that job. It took me a year to get a computer and I finally got a computer, but I was using a typewriter. I wrote by hand, still write by hand, and then I put it into the computer. But back then I was typing, and I was a terrible typist. But anyway, and that's improved. Hopefully it's improved. I know I'm faster than I was. And so I started sending it out way too early. And I got rejection after rejection. But because of what the book was about, it was about two mentally challenged parents that have a child with the child of two mentally challenged parents in the 1950s in Louisiana, rural Louisiana. There was interest there. Because of what I wrote, not because of my writing. And I was told that several times. We love your idea, but the writing just isn't there. Or it is, you know. So they would ask to see it longer. I got really close. Then I got an agent, and she started getting the rejections first. So a little cushion. Finally, one of the rejections that I got said, I like her writing style, or it's interesting, but the first half's interesting, but the second half sounds like a soap opera. And when he said that, I knew what was wrong with it, because I knew the second half I wasn't proud of it. I didn't want to read it even. And, you know, that's a good sign. If you want to read the parts you want to read aloud, those are probably your most, you know, your strongest part of your book. But the parts that you're kind of avoiding, you know, returning to, that may be the part you need to return to. So I told my agent, I said, don't send it out anymore. And she said, you know, Kimberly, I didn't want to tell you this, but I think you're about to get an offer. Next week, I got an offer. And the editor said the same thing that I suspected. The second half doesn't work. And what the other editor had said. So the book. And my editor, who's still my editor today, she said, I would not have been able to buy that book today. It would have had to have been stronger you would have had to brought it to a place that was closer to publication. That I had to do major surgery to that book. It went back probably 4 or 5 times with her. And she was so patient with me. She was a young editor. And, you know, she was so patient with me and would, you know, send back a very insightful letter. And it helped me so much. I have the best editor. I really, anyway, it was a long process. I didn't tell you how I got the agent. And that's such an important part these days, because when I first started, there were houses that you didn't have to have an agent. And so I would go to many conferences. I took a lot of classes, went to local conferences, but I also went to conferences in New Mexico, Colorado, and I would make these appointments with the agents and editors.
Your book, The Ambassador of Nowhere, Texas, is set in Antler, Texas. Yeah. Are there any similarities between the towns in the Texas Panhandle? And
Are there any similarities between what? The towns
the in Texas the Panhandle? Panhandle? Yes.
Yes. I know you know where Claude, Texas is.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So Antler is based on Claude. But it's what happened is I started writing it. And when Zachary Beaver came to town, you know, mm-hmm. which is the this Ambassador is the companion novel to that one. And it. Cotton became important to the story. And I, even though Claude's a made up town, I really wanted that to feel like a real town. And so my friend who lives in Amarillo, who grew up in Memphis, Texas, said, mm-hmm. you can't grow cotton in Claude, but you can grow it in Memphis. So I moved my town. So I say, if you move Claude and place it around where Memphis is at,
that's Antler.
You know, then you have Antler. But in my mind, it really is Claude. Okay. It really is. It's so much, you know, it looks like Claude. It's laid out like Claude. And I've made a lot of creative liberties there, too.
Because of your dad's military career, you moved often. Did those experiences inform your writing?
I think they do. Place is very important to me. Setting is so important because I had to call a different place home. You know, growing up, you know, my dad didn't get out of the military to the year I graduated from high school. So I've been I lived a lot of places, and my mom, you know, I owe it to her. She made every place a home. And so I have an emotional attachment to most places that I've lived because of that, including an island called Guam. You know, I feel like that's my island home. And so they do. Those are the places I care about. It's important when I set a story that I set it in a place that I care about. My daughter writes, and she was telling me about a new story she had. And she said, it's going to be suburbia and it's going to be anywhere. I can't write like that. I have to really have a real place. I think that's cool. She can, you know, she wants every kid that lives in suburbia to relate to it. But I have to have a real place. I have to know where Toby lived. I have to know in my new book where Riley lived. You know, I have to know where all those characters live. And that means sometimes going to the place and actually finding houses, understanding the way people talk, because people talk differently. What are they talking about? Eavesdropping at the Dairy Queen had something to do with it. I tell you, the fact that we can text now has really ruined my that skill that I had for eavesdropping.
Because you used to be able to overhear conversations.
Yeah, you know, even in the plane, you know, on the plane, you know, when you listen, you know, people would get on the phone while they had those few minutes, you know, to call somebody, you know, before the plane took off. You know, it was annoying sometimes, but sometimes I'm like, oh.
Sometimes those annoying things, you're annoyed at first and then you go, oh, I'm so putting this in a book.
That's right. Or I'm using that, or it makes me think of something, or just the way they say something, or a little term. And, you know, I'm missing that now. So it's harder to eavesdrop. It really is.
Not that we don't try. Your books offer a view into some difficult formative years in the shadow of historical events. Mm-hmm. It's a blend that obviously works. Where did you come up with this inspiration? Kind of this recipe that you've used in your books?
I really didn't. That usually comes a little bit later. In My Louisiana Sky, which was my first book, you know, I was trying to think of what year do I want to do it in? And my parents grew up in the 50s. And so they made their childhood so real to me. And that's why I chose the 50s. And then I realized, oh, the polio, you know, as I research, I realized the polio vaccines, you know, were given out around that same time period that I'm writing about. So it happens like that. And when Zachary Beaver came to town, I wanted to write about a character that was close to my age. I ended up putting it in 1971. That Vietnam War was going on during that time. I didn't choose it because of that, but I realized I needed to let my readers know about it. And so what I did is I thought, well, I'll have a boy from that town be away serving in Vietnam. And that way they can mention him every once in a while. And the readers will understand there's a war going on, because we knew, those of us that grew up in that time period, there was a war going on. We turned on the news every night. There was body counts. And, you know, that being a military kid, you know, you're very aware of that, because you have friends, parents that are serving there, or my friend who had a POW bracelet. So those are little things you can put in there. What happened in that story, though, is it grew, because I started letting one of the main characters' brother serve in Vietnam. Thought that would be interesting. Then it grew a little bit more, because I realized there was a storyline there, because the young man serving writes his younger brother, which is the best friend of the main character.
Nice.
It grew. And so this all just happens as I'm, you know, writing. It was not something I planned. Now with Ambassador, what happened, never was going to do a companion novel, never was going to do any type of sequel or anything. But one day I was thinking about, who would Toby, my main character from Zachary, marry? And when I realized who it would be, I started laughing. I thought, well, that'd be funny. You know, if that happened, and, you know, what, there's an age difference there. So what year would they have a child that would be 12 or 13 years old? And when I came up with the early 2000s, is how old that child would be, I started thinking that would be an interesting book to have that as the background. 9/11, because, you know, there's books that are about places that were affected by 9/11, closer to it, New York, DC, those, but how about those, you know, we all were affected in some way by this. We all felt vulnerable after 9/11, and I can show that in the book. And then the storyline grew a little bit, because I realized there was going to be a visitor or somebody that was going to come and live there. And they were affected by 9/11 because they lived in that area and they lost someone because of it. So it really just sort of tumbleweeds, you know, it becomes like a tumbleweed.
Yeah. You write picture books in partnership with artists. How do you know you've matched with one who conveys your intent?
This is probably the thing that is people find most fascinating. I don't work with the artist.
Really?
My editor picks the artist. I've already written the text. She finds them. She shows me their work before she sends it to them and says, I'm thinking about this person. What do you think? And so I just trust my gut with her. And, you know, she's never steered me wrong. And sometimes I'm really surprised, you know, by the art she's chosen or the artist she's chosen. Then what happens is that, I'll say something I heard Michael Haig say. He said, the picture book author thinks it's her book, but when I get the text, it becomes mine. And so it's an equal partnership. And so then thank goodness there's these editors that act as the matchmakers, and I don't discuss things with them. And I've even had to change things because of art that maybe either overlooked or decided, you know, I don't think I want to do it like that. I've had to go back and I'll go, you know what? I'm going to change my words on this because that doesn't make sense if I don't do that. Or, you know, I have a book called Skinny Brown Dog, and I love Donald Saff's work, but he did not put the tiny spot that was supposed to be on the dog's ear. And my editor said, well, does there have to be one? I was like, yes, because that was one of the things that the baker noticed about the dog, you know, when he starts to really like the thinking about maybe I want to keep this dog, you know, and he notices the chocolate chip eyes and he notices the little tiny tip on his ear. I said, that's part of the whole, you know, so he went back and it wasn't tiny, but he put a spot on his ear. I think the thing that people are most fascinated by is that I don't pick the artist and I don't even interact with them until after the work is done. And even then, a lot of people don't. I've been very fortunate. I have with all of mine on the picture books, and I've even met a few of them. Mm-hmm. So that's been fun. The strangest of collaborations is the way I can put it.
What are you reading now?
I'm reading Larry McMurtry's second memoir called Literary Life. You know, he passed away recently.
Yes.
And so it made me, you know, I had it on my bookshelf, but I hadn't read it yet. So I'm reading that. It's really interesting.
What are you writing right now?
I am writing a book that's set in the West Bank of New Orleans, where I also lived in high school. But it's about middle graders. They're three friends, and they were born the year that Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. And so they are called the Hurricane Girls.
How have your relationships with other authors affected your career?
Oh, big time. You know, like I said, I took classes and conferences, but I also was in critique groups. And I was in a lot of different critique groups at different times. And and you learned something from all of them. But it was really the best critique group for me, the best fit critique group for me was one that they were writing children's literature only. And, you know, because that's where their interest was and where they read. And so when I got in that group, and we called ourselves the Scribblers, and we would meet every week, and I would not be the writer I am today without those ladies. And I could say that really for all the critique groups I was in. But when you're with people that are writing and respect what you write in the genre you write, gosh, they helped me so much.
What's the best writing advice you've received?
I think it's advice I probably have read over and over again. And I'll probably think of something new tomorrow if you ask me that question. I think writing every day is so important. And I can't tell you that I've done that all the time. And I'm not a very nice person when I haven't been doing it. It really makes me feel like I haven't done what I'm on this earth to do. And so even if you are just writing one sentence, you know, you're staying connected to the work, especially if you write novels. I think novels need that attention of being every day. That's not to say there's not places where you step back and let it cool off and, you know, for even 2 weeks or a month and then come back to it. But, and I'm not talking about during a draft. I'm talking about between drafts. But I think writing every day, it gets you in the rhythm of writing. It's what you do, so you might as well do it. You're calling yourself a writer. That's what writers do. That's why I don't try to call myself an author, because it feels like something I've done. But to me, a writer is somebody that is working, is doing it.
That's great. Well, Kimberly, thank you for spending time with us and sharing all of your experiences and these great stories. And we look forward to seeing what you're coming out with next.
So thank you, Chris, and congratulations on your book coming out.
Thank you.
To learn more, visit KimberlyWillisHolt.com.
Writer's Table podcast music by Pavel Uden and photography by Casey Meineke. If you like what you're hearing, please hit the subscribe button and consider leaving a review.